welcome back to another week of Behind the Lens. I'm Debbie Elias, film critic, creator, and host of Behind the Lens, where we go behind the lens and below the line with those movers and shakers, those film and TV and streaming makers, all those producers, directors, writers, actors, cinematographers, production designers, costume designers, film editors, sound editors, mixers, and designers, the VFX gurus, composers, stuntmen and women, and so many more. And you all know how much I love film and how much I like to talk. So film, talking, it all comes together very nicely every week right here on Behind the Lens, a.k.a. BTL Radio Show. And it is a joy to borrow from my friend, L.A. movie dude Billy, to give you the inside of how the sausage is made. So I'm glad to be back after the Memorial Day holiday. I hope yours was fantastic. I'm betting it was better than mine. Mine was 3 days of no electricity. All day Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, thanks to Southern California Edison. Seriously, I kid you not. A royal pain experience that includes tossing food that was in the refrigerator. Always nice to throw money away, isn't it? Especially in these hard economic times. But I have to give a huge, huge shout out of thanks to my home away from home, the Backstage Bar and Grill in Culver City, for letting me charge my devices multiple times over the 3 day outage. I was like charging stuff, coming home, working on stuff because I needed stuff in the house and I couldn't lug everything over there. Plus, I don't want to take up that kind of space and I need the quiet to concentrate on some stuff. I know, me and quiet, it boggles the mind. But I was making multiple trips over there. But a huge, huge shout out for Kevin, bartender Kevin, who kept me cheered and uplifted while I was charging my phone and tablet at midnight on Tuesday so I could do interviews in the morning. Because I had already used up the battery twice in the tablet to screen two films that I needed to screen because the links were expiring. So it was a round robin of clusterfuck hell. But just who did I need a charge phone to interview with on Wednesday? Well, none other than the two people you're going to hear from right now, Katie Cassidy and director John Keyes, who are about to talk about their new film, Speed Demon. And what a film it is. A runaway train, a demon named Asmodeus, the king of the demons, and a revenge demon, a nun called upon to perform an exorcism. On paper, it sounds like the kind of high-concept, supernatural action horror mashup that could easily veer into camp and comedy. Instead, director John Keyes, and knowing what he did with the cleanup crew, I'm surprised he didn't go the camp route here. Pleasantly surprised, because what he delivers is just phenomenal. But John and star and producer, Katie Cassidy, deliver something that is far more compelling. Because beneath demonic possession, biblical imagery, and escalating terror is a deeply human story about grief, addiction, faith, and self-discovery. And at the center of it all is Sister Lou, beautifully played by Katie. Now, the official synopsis of Speed Demon is, when Father Novak and Sister Lou board a train from Montreal to New York City, they weren't prepared for the danger and evil that would pursue them. After the train is taken over by the demon Asmodeus, Father Novak and Sister Lou must battle possessed strangers on a runaway train, with Sister Lou forced to overcome her faltering faith and perform the first exorcism done by a nun. Got it? So, Speed Demon is directed by John Keyes, it's written by Domenico Salvaggio, and it stars Katie Cassidy, William H. Macy as Father Novak, Alan McCullough, who delivers an amazing performance as one of the passengers on the train, named Edwin, an older, lonely crotchety man. Sari Ambulo, Jeremy Matthew Fight, the scene-stealing discovery, Sky Val Fuller as the young Sophia, Noriko Sato, Michael John Importa, and John Patrick Jordan. And of course, what would a John Keyes film be without his multiple right hands, cinematographer Austin Schmidt and editor R.J. Cooper? Plus, this go-round, he's got production designer Diego Diaz and the award-worthy work of special effects makeup artisan Greer Gillespie. I am a huge fan of Austin's and RJ's. Just Austin is an amazing cinematographer, and RJ worked with multiple filmmakers on that last batch of Bruce Willis films that were done before his retirement was announced, when it wasn't made public yet or the diagnosis hadn't been made about his aphasia. And thanks to RJ, he did some really nice editing to minimize some of the difficulty that Bruce may have been having at the time. But he's very good with tension. He's very good with action. So he's perfect at editing demons. What can I say? Now, his sister Lou, Katie, delivers one of the best performances of her career. You see and feel not only her inner conflict, but her determination to survive and triumph over all of the demons unfolding on this train ride. She is one badass nun. Now, we do have a casualty early on in the first act with Father Novak. And when that happens, that's a tiny spoiler. It falls to Sister Lou to figure out what is happening and do what has never been done before by a nun, perform an exorcism. She brings terrific street smarts, attitude, and appropriate foul language into play when trying to gather and inspire a group of passengers who she needs to help her if they are to survive the train ride, especially when they discover the engineer and conductor are dead. And thanks to the smarts of young 11-year-old Sophia, who is beautifully played by the amazing Sky Fuller, who is a voracious reader and wise beyond her years, they learn the train will crash when it hits a certain curve on the tracks and everyone will die. Now, that is gleeful news for the demon Asmodeus. As Sophia, Sky steals every scene she's in, and her chemistry with Katie's sister Lou is heartwarming and hopeful. Now, there's definite female strength happening in this story. We got a strong nun. We have a young girl who is smarter than the average bear and looks up to Sister Lou. We've got another passenger, Vicky, who carries the weight in her relationship with her significant other, her partner, David, who has a severe heart condition. Very female. Females are running the world here, let me tell you. I love the character development. Between Domenico Salvaggio's script and John, the casting and direction we see and feel the character development and the story development. And not just with Sister Lou, but a fabulous turn by Alan McCullough, who, you know, as the crotchety, disbelieving loner who has lost his faith, does, quote-unquote, see the light and has a change of heart that leads him straight into the fray with Asmodeus, and also seeing the error of his ways over the years that led him to hatred and aloneness. Alan McCullough is fantastic to watch. And what's so nice is that the passengers on the train who step up to help Sister Lou, they each get their moment to shine in this film. John does a beautiful job of giving each of them a showcase moment. At least one. Now, Diego Diaz's production design is outstanding. The train itself is fantastic. I love how Diaz and Keyes and Austin Schmidt utilize the linear design of the train car, as well as extending horizontally into the seating and the windows. There is a very biblical sequence with black crows and ravens smashing themselves into the windows, bloodying them and shattering them. Now, for me, that was a traumatic scene to watch because I'm petrified of birds. I mean, petrified. Any of you out there that know me or have heard me over the past or read my work over the past 45 years, well, we're pushing 45 years come February 1st. I am petrified to the point of I will have panic attacks. I'm that scared of them. So watching that and the authenticity and RJ's editing of that effect, just outstanding, outstanding. But, you know, this creative triumvirate celebrates the richness of dark red and burgundy, dark woods within the train cars. And these are, like, pretty fancy train cars, I might add. The bar, beautiful dark wood bar. And that plays a big part in the latter part of the second act and then in the third. It's gorgeous. And Sister Lou likes the bar. That is her, like, reconnaissance place. That's where everybody converges, at the bar. Also, you can feel the negative space within the shadows of the wood. And that negative space and shadows meld into the blackness of Asmodeus, as well as a place called the In-Between. But it's Austin's camera work that really shines as he varies angles and locations within the train cars. We don't get the same shots over and over, which you might suspect you'd have in a linear train. And he gives us different POVs of the passengers, such as Sophia or Edwin, and keeps us visually engaged at all times. And this is where Austin really shines, with negative space, and never more so than with the creation of the In-Between. It's a space between the living and the dead, which is black as coal, but shaded with small shades of ashier coal tones. Now, for whatever reason, Sister Lou has a gift and can actually transport her mind into this space and talk with her deceased father and communicate with demons. Isn't that a nice gift to have? Now, thanks to RJ, we seamlessly go between the world of the living on the train, which is being destroyed and tormented by Asmodeus, and that In-Between, which gives Sister Lou clarity. The whole film, it's fascinating visually and from a story structure. And through it all, RJ keeps ratcheting up the tension. The closer we get to that dangerous curve in the track, the more intense Asmodeus' demonic attacks become, and the harder Sister Lou pushes forward towards her exorcism. Wow. You're going to be on the edge of your seat. The visual effects are very well done, not only of our demon, but visual effects overall, such as the crows and ravens smashing themselves into death on the train windows. Very authentic, very biblical. And yes, again, it scared me to death as I am panic attack petrified of birds. Now, I'll tell you, as to be expected with demons running amok, we do lose some folks we have grown to care about. But by film's end, you are left gobsmacked and begging for more. Overall, solid story, terrific performances, visually engaging, and I love, love, love the ending and sequel setup. And according to John, he's already got a sequel written, and he has 3, 4, and 5 plotted out already. And yes, Katie would come back as Sister Lou. So, with my enthusiastic and thrilling setup about demons, now done, take a listen as actor and producer Katie Cassidy and director John Keyes talk all things Speed Demon. I am so happy to be speaking with both of you again. Katie, the last time we talked was for Agent Game. And And John, we did the cleanup crew.
Yep, I remember. That, good to hear your voice.
It's so good to hear yours. And, you know, I'm just...
Oh, you're so sweet.
Katie, I'm just disappointed that I have not seen any progress on the film that you were wanted to direct, that you were developing, Daddy Issues.
Oh, hilarious. That got put on ice, basically. And sometimes that happens, but, you know.
But it's opened you up to do a lot more fun things, like playing a nun who has addiction problems, who drinks, who swears, and who can, you know, beat the crap out of a demon.
Exactly. She's a badass, what can I say?
And you're perfect for that. You're perfect for it.
Oh, thank you. John, thank you so much.
I mean, John, you did a great job in casting Katie as Sister Lou. I think she does an amazing job. But, and you also do an amazing job directing this, but I've got to ask both of you, what was it about this script that made you say, I got to do this? John, I have a sneaking suspicion it's because it is weird and wonderful. And I know how much you like that.
You nailed it right on the head. It's weird and wonderful. I mean, how often do you get to direct an action movie about a runaway train that happens to be a horror movie about demon possession, that happens to be about a nun performing an exorcism filled with drama and comedy?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, what spoke to you, Katie, when either John or the producers came to you and handed you this script to look at?
Well, of course, the character. And, I mean, the script, it was definitely a page-turner, which is always a plus. But just given her flaws and her backstory and the complications and her hardship with the relationship with her father, I could relate to that. And then, you know, playing a nun, something I had never done. so that was something I got to learn a bit about. And then, you know, her self-medicating and turning to drugs and alcohol to sort of try to suppress the trauma that she's been through, and then that's where we meet her, and the fact that she's dealing with these inner demons and also internal demons, but also external demons, and she has to, you know, put down the bottle, step into her power, and save the day. And I love that she was a badass, and I love strong female characters.
Now, do you think you're now qualified that you could go forth and perform an exorcism?
I don't know about that. Maybe in another world. Maybe in the other world.
In the other world, yes. Now, something that I really love is the backstory of Sister Lou. How much of that was already developed? How much of that did the two of you put your heads together to come up with? Because the backstory of Sister Lou is fascinating. And the way you have it paced out, John, with reveals is just so beautifully done, giving us breadcrumbs as we go, building to the huge full revelation in, no pun intended, with no biblical pun intended, with the full revelation in the third act. So, because it's a wonderful backstory the two of you have come up with.
Thank you. I mean, I know... On paper, Sister Lou's, you know, the backstory of Sister Lou's father having died, you know, the suicide, that was always present. But one of the things that we talked about early on was, I mean, there's always been an idea of doing further Sister Lou movies. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in thinking on that, you know, thinking on both the arc within Speed Demon, but just the future as well, I wanted to delve much further into her backstory, but also, you know, the things, without giving the story away to people who will watch it, you know, the things that have painted her and touched her, you know, and made her the way she is, those were things that we introduced through continuing to revise scripts during pre-production. And, you know, all of those things that have kind of affected her from that past, you know, I developed out, and then Dominico and I introduced in the script. And then, of course, you know, Katie, in embracing the character, then fleshed all of that out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And John was really helpful, and which he's given me permission to say so. He's a recovering drug addict, alcoholic, and he's also... I know you don't practice anymore, John, but Catholic, so I was able to lean on him a lot for help with anything sort of in that realm, and it came up in discussion, and he helped me kind of like absorb and understand where the character would be at and what she's gone through, and I think in relation to his own personal journey.
Mm-hmm. Yep. No, exactly. It's handled so beautifully, and
Thank you.
Not just this. Hey, you know, I was snorting cocaine last night. I drank a bottle of vodka. There's none of that. It's very subtle, the way the challenges of addiction are shown with the temptation and then turning away from it. And you do a beautiful job, Katie, of expressing emotion through your eyes that we feel the inner turmoil that Sister Lou is facing when it comes to those personal demons. And I really, really like seeing that. And it just solidifies what I've always said about you. And I said this to you before. You just grow and grow and grow as an actor.
Thank you.
So I love seeing that growth. I'm still kind of surprised, you know, to see you as a badass nun after seeing you in Royal Christmas Crush. But, you know.
You know, you got to do a little bit of this, a little bit of that, I guess.
Girls got to do, you know. Girls got to do what a girl's got to do.
Now, yeah, exactly.
Now, I'm curious, John, very impressive is Diego Diaz's production design with the train, and hand in hand with that is Austin. I'm so thrilled you teamed up with Austin again as your DP. I can't imagine you doing a film without Austin.
Exactly, yep.
But I love how the design of the train and then Austin's work, you make great use of the linear train space, but then you also give us things coming from the sides, such as glass, such as birds.
Crows.
Yep. And I'm petrified of birds. So for me to watch that scene was really difficult. I just want you to know that. But how did you go about working with Diego for the production design and then working with Austin to develop the visual tonal bandwidth and the visual grammar? Because when you've got that linear factor going, so often a filmmaker and a DP are limited in where they can go. You were not limited. You celebrated and embraced this. So,
Yep, absolutely. So I got there weeks before official pre-production started. The train cars had already been built, but they had not been dressed out or painted or anything. And so I got to spend weeks by myself, honestly, in those train cars with the script and working out how I wanted the train to look on the inside, what colors I wanted, wood, lamps, lights, chairs, you know, the whole shebang. And Austin and I spent a ton of time on Zoom, just kind of, you know, before he even got there, we spent a lot of time on Zoom discussing and walking through all of that. The art director for the movie, so Diego was out of Georgia coming back, and then the art director was actually in New Jersey where we were filming at. So we got to have him come over and be on the sets a lot. And as Austin and I worked out what we wanted the train to look like, we were able to relay that to Diego and to Eric. And then once they got going, then it was, you know, we had spent a lot of time, but then Austin got into town, and then we spent all of pre-production basically blocking out. And Austin, one of the things that I love about Austin is his ability to not do the same shot twice. Mm-hmm. And so he was constantly looking for ways to keep the train feeling, you know, unique, but you're not contained unless you need to be, you know, create that feeling. And we just spent so much time blocking and shot listing and figuring out to keep it exciting and keep it moving, but also giving the actors the ability to respond maybe and to be able to move around and kind of come up with stuff on the spot. So yeah, prep. That's one of the things I love the most about Austin is we share a brain and our ability to kind of think that way and move quickly on putting those kind of things together.
Yeah, I just love how you make use of this space. And don't think I didn't notice that Sister Lou liked to have her reconnaissance point as being the bar several times during this.
Yep.
And
she sure did.
And nicely done bar, too, by the way, John. But the whole thing, the whole train design, the darker woods, the darker tones, the deeper reds, and it all plays into the negative space that we get. Early on, that sequence of you, Katie, where you're in total darkness, and it catches us off guard. That is so beautifully shot and performed.
Well, thank you. And I think the team was so wonderful. You know, I feel like we have, obviously, John, Austin, Diego, you know, the actors, all of us, we embraced it all, and I'm glad that it translated. It makes me very happy to hear that.
Yeah, I really love that. And I mean, John, I think, you know, I'm a big fan of negative space when it's used properly.
And Austin is as well. And man, so much of that, you know, I walk into it with an idea of what I wanted out of the in-between. And then Austin kind of ran with that. And then he came back with a whole bunch of different ideas. And then we started, you know, throwing some away and finding some others and kind of incorporating those things until we kind of came into that. And just obviously in the way that Austin and I work, so much of that camera framing and the choice of shots, you know, is him and his desire to always be telling story, not just doing pretty shots, but always telling story through the camera. And we changed that. We wanted the in-between to become its own particular space within this universe. And I thought he did a wonderful job capturing that.
Just beautiful. And to see, and because that's difficult scene, because you have black on black on black. So it's a darn good thing, Katie, that you have blonde hair.
Well, I currently have brown hair, but I didn't
have blonde hair. But, you know, good thing.
But it certainly was.
And then just the little bit of white on the wimple. It's a good thing. So we could tell where you were.
Yeah. Now, yeah, exactly.
I have to say, Katie, really stand out for me is your dynamic with the other passengers, particularly, and oh my God, John, I don't know where you found her, but Sky Fuller, who played Sophia.
Oh.
Guys.
Yeah.
Guys.
She was great to work with. She was so fun.
She was, and she was literally the very last person we looked at. We had gone through all of the auditions for the little girls, and we had narrowed down choices. And then at the very last minute, the casting director, Heidi, called me and goes, "Wait, before you make a decision, I've got one more person I need you to see." And it was Sky. She came in at the last minute. She was so wonderful. Such a great actress, her big eyes. Yeah, she was fantastic. And she kept all of us laughing. She is so full of energy. She kept us laughing the whole time.
Yeah, she was great.
I mean, she plays so much wiser than her years. And she's got this cute precociousness. You know, so many kid actors, they're precocious, but they're obnoxious.
Yeah.
Sky as Sophia is not.
Yeah.
But she's inquisitive. She's intelligent. I just fell in love and I started laughing as she is describing how you uncouple the train cars.
Yeah, she was great. She really was.
But, you know, this entire ensemble, this could not have been an easy cast to assemble because of the different personalities of each character. What you needed from each character for Sister Lou to put to use properly in this exorcism. How challenging was the casting? And then, especially for you, Katie, leading this cast, so to speak, how much rehearsal time did you get? Because watching the relationships and the chemistries unfold, especially your chemistry with Alan McCullough as Edwin. Talk to me about this whole casting and this development of these relationships on screen.
We didn't really, honestly, we didn't have a lot of rehearsal. I feel like we all kind of prepared separately. And by the way, that's what is more authentic to the story as well.
Yeah.
These people don't know each other before they get on this train. And so obviously William H. Macy and Father Novak and Sister Lou know each other. But aside from that, you know, that's kudos to John and the casting director for casting such great actors that were very, just like the dynamics worked really well. And everyone was very unique and specific, and we all kind of gelled together, and it just worked. And I think that you just get lucky sometimes, and I feel like that's a little bit of what happened.
No, that's exactly, I mean, 100%. We got really incredibly lucky, I mean, with all of those choices and such. And I don't know, like Jeremy and Sari, you know, the two of them got to spend some time because they're boyfriend-girlfriend, so they got to spend some time, you know, before we started filming, developing out their relationship. Obviously, Katie and Bill got to spend some time talking about Sister Lou and Father Novak. But yeah, we got all of these people came through, and I got lots of, it was really nice because I actually got a lot of really, really strong actors. I got a lot of really good auditions, and I had a lot of choices, which was beautiful. But then it gets into, you start getting into the, okay, don't want anybody to look too much the same, so that we're always got, you know, everybody's always their own individual. And then I'm always looking for, particularly in audition, somebody who's bringing things that aren't expected. You know, 15 actors do the delivery the same way, but the 16th does it differently. And I'm like, that's what I'm interested in. What are you doing differently? What are you bringing because of that? And then I spent a whole lot of time with auditions pulled up on multiple computer screens, watching and playing to kind of just get a sense or vibe of cadence and tone and playfulness or seriousness, and hoping that I was putting those right combinations together. And ultimately, I feel like I did, because I'm super happy with the chemistry that everybody ended up having. And they clicked immediately on set. Everybody clicked really, really quickly. And fortunately, we got to shoot some of the earlier train stuff when everybody's getting to know each other. That was all the first few days of filming. So even though we didn't have rehearsal time, all of them had time to introduce their characters and build those relationships in the movie before we had to shoot the rest of it, where we got all kinds of crazy jumping all over the script.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have to compliment Greer Gillespie's work on the special effects makeup. Wow.
Love Greer.
John.
Love Greer. I've worked with Greer before, and when I knew that we were doing this, Greer was one of my first phone calls to find out if she was available. And then we worked through, you know, tons and tons of designs to kind of settle on the looks that we want. And I was super happy with what Greer brought to this.
Wow. I mean, it's just, I love the makeup, in particular on Alan as Edwin. That is just mind-blowing. It is absolutely stunning, in a horrifically stunning way.
Thank you.
Now, I know, I'm getting annoying texts telling me I've only got a minute left. So I have to ask both of you, will we see, because of the way this film ends, and I did laugh, because you really have it ending in what a lot of people could interpret as a double entendre meaning. But will we see more of Sister Lou? Will there be another chapter?
The script for another chapter is written. And if everything goes well, we definitely plan on doing a second. And we've even got the treatments for 3, 4, and 5.
And would you come back for all of them, Katie?
Oh yeah, I don't think you can replace Sister Lou.
Yep, agree.
You know, I want to see the next exorcism, though. The way this film ends, there's got to be a subsequent exorcism. I really want to see that one.
Me too.
Yeah.
Oh, guys.
I definitely.
This has been so great getting to chat with both of you again. You've got to make more films together so we can do this again.
Absolutely.
Job.
We will make that happen.
Job, yes, so we well done on both of your parts. And Katie, you're a producer on this one as well. So, like I said, you keep growing. Performance, growing as a producer. I still want to see you direct a feature film.
Yeah.
And John, you know, I'll watch anything that you bring us. You know that. So
I appreciate that, Debbie.
Guys, thank you so, so much. And go have a wonderful rest of your day
you
or night.
Thank you, too. We will talk to you.
Thanks, guys. Bye-bye.
Bye.
And that was Katie Cassidy and John Keyes talking Speed Demon, which you can watch right now on multiple streaming platforms. It actually released yesterday on May 31st on a Sunday. I don't know. Sunday because of demons? Go figure. It's not been my experience in all these decades to have a Sunday release. But now we do. Now, very quickly, I do have to follow up with all of you about Marshalls, which gave us a cliffhanger season one finale last Sunday. And, of course, Dutton Ranch. Now, I can't wait for season two of Marshalls. And based on how it ended, I will not be at all surprised if we see a crossover with Dutton Ranch. 4 episodes in on Dutton Ranch, and I'm screaming at the television, and I was crying with what just transpired in episode 4. This is balls-to-the-wall storytelling. You think you saw great storytelling in Yellowstone? Dutton Ranch is putting it to shame. That's how good it is. Now, I know CBS, Paramount Plus, Paramount Network, owned by Skydance, and are part of the whole Colbert cancellation kerfuffle, the 60 Minutes mess. But if you can put aside your disgust and hatred for a moment, and trust me, it's a difficult thing to do, these shows are worth watching. Now, Marshall's season one ended, so reruns are on now. Season 2 will be back in the fall, I guess. But Dutton Ranch is streaming right now every Friday. It's on Paramount Plus and then 8 o'clock on Paramount Network on television. So definitely check them out, especially Dutton Ranch. And if you want to read more about my or hear more about my enthusiasm for Dutton Ranch, just follow me on social media, on Instagram, Deblore, D-E-B-L-O-R-E. I'm always posting about Dutton Ranch. Twitter, I got some stuff on, but mainly Instagram with Dutton Ranch. And Facebook as well. Because I am addicted. I'm as addicted to Dutton Ranch as I was to Yellowstone. So, that is all the time we have today. I could go longer with another interview, but then we're looking at another 45 to 50 minutes. But make sure to check out Speed Demon, currently streaming on multiple platforms. Another terrific film to check out that opens June 5th is Seven Snipers. So it opens on Friday. Seven Snipers, it'll be available on digital, and it stars Rhoda Mitchell and Tim Roth. It is a killer action thriller set down under from the wonderful director, Sandra Scabera. Now, my interview with Sandra and full review of the film, which were under embargo until today, are now up on the website, so you can check them out. And heads up, mark your calendars for this Wednesday, June 3rd, when Hungry hits theaters. Yes, you've heard me talk about Hungry. Hungry Hippos. James Nunn, who I love, and James and I always have so much fun. This was like our 5th time chatting about films together. You know, we have almost as much fun as people or hippos do when we talk film. But James delivers some of the hungriest hippos you've ever seen with this latest film. Hippos in the Louisiana Bayou, but filmed in Malta. I am hungry for hungry, and you will be too. I love this film. It's exciting. It's fun. There are some characters that you will love to hate. And yes, you will be rooting for the hippo. It's kind of like a shark film. You're going to root for the shark. Which is another film you need to be on the lookout for. Chum. I'll talk more about that next week. But because of embargo, my review and interview with James are on ice until this Wednesday, when the same day is opening day. They decided to open because of the excitement over Hungry. Distributor decided to release the film earlier than was originally scheduled, as in like 20 days earlier. But you'll be able to read my review and my interview with James this Wednesday. And I think you're going to be hearing my interview with James Nunn next Monday right here on BTL. Now, as always, head on over to BehindTheLensOnline.net for more reviews and interviews. And there are plenty new ones up there. With 7 more already queued to drop this week. And a lot of those are FYC or ME-FYC interviews, artisan interviews. So, enough of my yammering today. Go see Sit at Home, see Speed Demon. On Wednesday, see Hungry. On Friday, see 7 Snipers. Plus, there's that little thing, Mandalorian and Baby Yoda Grogu is in theaters. So, go see that one, too. But, that's it. So, until next week. I'm Debbie Elias. This is Behind the Lens.